You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR LP 92.9 FM Los Gatos, and KMRT LP 101.9 FM Santa Cruz.
I'm Alta Ifland, and you're listening to Drinks with Tony.
Get on the Drinks with Tony show. Yeah.
You're listening to Drinks with Tony. I'm your host, Tony Duchesne. Today on the show, we have Alta Ifland. She's the author of Two Queens and a Chronicler. Alta, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Tony. Hi.
Hi. And you have a beautiful smile on your face because you have a novel out today, but it's in French. It's not in English. So for all the French listeners out there, there is a novel that you should read.
So no, I have a smile on my face, first of all, because full disclosure, I had technical issues to start the Zoom.
Oh, right.
So yeah. I managed. So that's the first reason. And the second is because yesterday I just had this out. So it's actually not a novel. It's a collection of short stories.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So,
and what's the title? What's the title of it in French, just in case we have French dual English French listeners.
Elegie pour un monde fabuleux.
I couldn't say
French.
it any better. Beautiful. That's fun.
So in English, it's Elegy for a Fabulous World.
Yeah.
And I mine in the States in English, and I translated it in French
Oh, okay.
several months ago.
My internet snapped there for a second. So, go back to, you went to you said the English title, and then what did you say after that? Cause all I got was, when I say
okay.
all I got was that I'm doing my hands in the air and still
Oh.
photo for all you listeners out there. All right.
Okay. Let's hope we're not going to have many, many interruptions.
That was
So,
on my end. So that was, yeah, go ahead.
So that the book in English was published in 2009.
Oh, okay.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
And it actually it was shortlisted for the Northern California Book Award in Fiction.
Cool.
And I remember this big ceremony. I was present in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Because they have every year. I think they still have them. They have this book, Northern California Book Awards, every
Huh.
year. And that was in 2010, I was a finalist.
Okay.
And so many years later, so no, now I live in France. So I'm actually translating into French the books I wrote in English and published in the States. So
Oh,
I
cool.
translated and I translated in several months, and the book came out literally yesterday.
Wow.
But I still don't have it. I still
Yeah.
don't have the copy.
And that is the plight of many authors, where you're just like, wait, my book's out and I don't have a copy yet. Where, publisher? But we just shrug, like you just shrugged. What is it like? What is it? Because I know you're a translator. You translate other works too. Yeah, that's it. So,
Yes.
what is it like when you're translating your own work? Does it feel easier or does it feel harder than if you're working on a project that's not originally yours?
It's a different type of work because I allow myself liberties that I don't take with other people's work.
Oh, there's almost a
Because
re-editing where you're like, I could do this a little better, and let me just go ahead and edit the axe that sentence, and you know what, this would sound even better, kind of thing.
Exactly.
Oh,
Exactly.
wow.
Yeah. And in fact, I'm planning, because the book in English is now out of print, so I'm planning to re-edit it in English, because I notice things. You know, when you translate, you
Yeah.
do such a deep reading and you notice things that don't make sense in the original.
Yes.
Like sometimes if a sentence is not quite logical, you know, when you translate it, that everything comes out when you translate. Every little detail and every little inconsistency and illogical thing. Because when you translate, you have to understand, you have to make everything clear.
Right.
So that's why now I'm planning to re-edit the whole English too.
That
So
is
basically very, it's fun for me to translate myself.
fascinating.
Yeah.
I've been taking Spanish lessons for a while, so I'm hoping I get better at that and my neighbors don't laugh at me at my screwed up grammar when I, hey, buenas, and then they're like they kind of go they talk fast just to make me screw up so that so I could be the butt of the joke. Anyway, it is now French is not is French your first language? It's not your first language, is it?
No, Romanian is my first language.
Romanian. Okay.
Yeah.
What was it like? So, and what was your second language?
Well, French, but French, I learned French in school, and
Yeah.
well, and I have a PhD in French. Yeah.
Okay. And is now Romanian is one of the few kind of romance-based languages in the Eastern Europe, right?
Yeah, it's the only Romance language in Eastern Europe, but Romanian is a mixture of a lot of things. It's Latin. I mean, obviously it's a Latin language, but it's also a lot of it has a lot of Slavic words and
Okay.
also words from the Balkan Peninsula that are common to Albanian and Macedonian and Romanian. So it's
Wow,
a
wow.
mixture of, yeah.
Fascinating. So was it well, you learned French from such a young age. I would assume the first language you learn as a second language is
Yeah.
probably feels natural almost as your native tongue.
Well, actually, English for a long time, and even now, English for me comes easier than French because I lived in the States for most of my life, more than
Oh,
in
okay.
Romania. So English became the language that I feel most comfortable with. It's not that I know it better because there are still things that because I didn't grow up with English, so it's there are things that I don't master very well, but at this point I feel more comfortable in English than in French because in France
Wow.
I've been living for 4 years and in the States I lived for 30. So even though I
Yeah.
have a PhD in French, I guess I know things in French that I can explain it like a teacher,
Yeah.
related to grammar, but I'm not that they don't come to me as naturally as they come in English, I suppose.
Fascinating. Wow. That's it's so strange how language works and how I mean it's strange to me because I don't have a second language, and even though I took Spanish in high school and I feel like I'm learning Spanish now. And I did take French too. I took French, and in the 90s I was able to converse in a way in France in certain situations where they thought I was French, but they didn't know where my accent was from. And I was married at the time, so they always
So,
assumed I
well, so you
was
lived in France?
I
Did you
didn't
live in
live
France for a
I didn't
while?
live. No, I didn't live. I was just there for a few weeks, 94, and then again in 1996. And the second in 94, I just knew nothing, and I hated Paris, and I just wanted, but I realized I hated myself. So it was a beautiful awakening to me. I'm just like, okay, who was the prick in this situation? Is the entire city of Paris the problem? Or is it me? So then I was like, maybe it's me. So then I started reading about French culture, and then I was like, it is me. Oh my God, because you got to do things a little
Oh, let me
different
guess. Let
with
me
it.
guess. Did you think that the French were rude to you? Was that
Yes, yes, I
it?
did. And then I
Did
went back to it, and I'm like, wait a second. What if a French person came into San Francisco and was like, doing things their way and not the way that a San Franciscan does, wouldn't I be a little
think?
put off? You know what? I need to
You
rethink
know, it's
this whole thing.
interesting. Yeah, but it's interesting. In the 90s, I was teaching French in the United States, and my students, they all said in the 90s that the French are rude. But I no longer hear that. I think the French changed. I think because I don't hear that much these days. In the 90s, I used to hear that all the time.
Oh,
So because
fascinating.
they had a different way of relating, but maybe they've gotten so used to American tourists, maybe they behave differently. I don't know, but I used to hear that all the time.
My ignorant opinion on it, because I have not spent as much time in France, and I was in Paris last year. And it was my I feel like I think Americans in the 1990s were known as the jerks that come flying in everywhere, and it's like, where's Disneyland? Well, all right then, we'll go to a cafe. Is it there was an American stereotype of what comes to other countries, and I think that was so maybe there was both at play, where American travelers started to get a little more sophisticated, and maybe even with online stuff, because I had to go and like go to the library to go, what did I do wrong in Paris? Why did everyone want to beat me up? And it's like, because I didn't say bonjour when I walked into a bodega, or a, you know, it's these little things. So when I went again, I'm like, I'm going again. I'm gonna do it right, and see what happens. And it was just like, Paris gave me the warmest hug ever. When I it was a completely different experience, and it's because I shifted, I learned some French, I was like really trying to immerse myself before I got there. And then when I got there, it was like I can ask for directions, I could be a little more polite. And usually people will say no when and I just find this so adorable, because this happened last year. I'd be like trying to figure something out, and I couldn't think in French at the moment. I'd be anxious, you know, traveling alone, and I'd be like, "Parlez-vous anglais?" And they'd be like, "Oh no," and I'd be like, "Okay," and then I'd start to talk in my terrible French, and then they're just like, so then they speak English back to me, and I'm like, oh, and I was like, and I realized that there is a culture of not wanting to say things the wrong way, and so it's like they're a little more aware of, and you could tell me if I'm wrong with this, by the way, but I feel like there's more of an awareness of how we speak. We need to do it properly in a certain way. And when I would say, and I'd just be like, your English is so good. Where did you learn English? I would always ask that. And it was always like, oh, there's so, no, it is terrible. And I'm like, no, it's really good. How do you know English so well? And it was just so much fun to see that there was kind of an embarrassment that they didn't speak English as well as they thought they did, but they were good.
What year was that? What year are you talking about now? Like, when was
Well,
that?
so this was last year, but also in
Oh.
1996, there was in 1996, I had a better hold on French, so people assumed I was French and that my wife at the time was British, but she just wouldn't talk because she was just scared to death of like, and I'm just like sitting there going, you know, I was like busting it out there.
Well, I mean, there is a huge difference between France, 1996. I mean, they are literally 30 years
Isn't it
apart,
crazy?
1996 and 2026.
Yeah.
They are 30 years.
Yeah, I was supposed to be
So,
dead by now. What happened?
so I, a lot more people, I think, speak English now than then.
Oh, okay,
And
yeah.
they are also a lot, they are much more used to American tourists now because they've had now like several dozens of years of
Yeah.
tourists, American tourists coming. I think they are more, you know, they are much more, I guess, I don't know, tolerant, if tolerant is the word, or just they are more Americanized too, the French. They have changed because even in the
Oh.
90s, let me tell you, in the 90s, when I had a PhD in French, okay, so my French was really good, but you know, I had a slight accent. But when I would open my mouth, immediately they would answer in Paris, not everywhere, but in Paris, they would answer in English. Just because I had a foreign accent, my French was totally fine, except I had a foreign accent. So, but now, I mean, now it's very different. They are, you know, they are used to tourists all the time, and I don't know. Yeah, as I say, I don't hear Americans complain anymore that the French are rude. So I don't know. Maybe
Yeah.
I don't know what the secret is.
Well,
But anyhow, yeah.
when I stayed in, because I was staying in Batignolles, I think it's called, the 17th, and then I was in Pigalle in the 9th, but I stayed in the Latin Quarter for like 2 nights of my last year, and I wanted to, the Latin Quarter was in, I didn't know how insane it got since 1996. Like it was just like Disneyland tourist. I was going, oh my God. I was like, get me out of here. I couldn't eat. I felt like I couldn't
Really?
breathe. Yeah. And then
I
I
think the last time I was in the Latin Quarter was about 25 years ago. So now I'm, you know, now since I'm getting older, I'm only going in the more peaceful areas. I'm not going in the Latin
Yeah.
Quarter anymore.
What are the
I'm too old
peaceful
for that.
same here. What are the peaceful areas for you?
Well, last time I was, because I was in May, I had an event with the Romanian Cultural Institute. So that was in the 13th arrondissement,
Oh,
but
cool.
in a
Yeah.
hotel. in a hotel close to the Fifth Arrondissement, which is the Latin Quarter. So it was at the edge of the Latin Quarter, right where it's more peaceful, but
Yeah.
still close enough to be able to walk there.
Yeah.
So I discovered, for example, I discovered Rue Mouffetard, which I didn't know, which is a famous street in Paris with the famous open market, and I it was lovely. I love that. I don't know Paris very well. I mean, I've been living in France, but I go to Paris every now and then, so I don't really know Paris. I keep discovering it.
Yeah, it's that's yeah. Oh, I think you said the street I was near, the Rue, because I was in the Saint George's. Well, are you talking about the being in the 13th with the market, or was this market somewhere?
This market,
Oh,
yeah, this
the
market
street.
is on the 13th
Oh,
arrondissement, Rue
okay.
Mouffetard.
That's
Yeah, that's true.
oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's not the same one then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I was gonna ask you something else, but we got so hung up on Paris. What inspired you? Because you're based near Strasbourg now. What was but oh no, let's go back. Well, I have another thought in my head. Romanian literature. I just went to my
Oh
bookshelf. Do
yeah.
you know Solenoid? Do you know this
Well,
author?
I read it. Yeah, Mircea Cărtărescu was the most famous Romanian writer. So I read this for almost a year in parallel English with the French. No, I'm sorry, English and the Romanian. And
Okay.
I wrote a book review in the publishing the in the Book Rail.
Really?
It's a really long review. I think it's a really
Oh, I
in-depth
can't
review
wait
that
to
I
read
did.
it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you should look for it. Yeah,
Yeah.
in the book. No, in the Bro no, I'm sorry, in the Brooklyn Rail. Yeah, I
Brooklyn
forgot.
Rail. Okay.
Yeah, the
Yes.
Brooklyn Rail. I'm
Yeah.
sorry. I start to forget, American names and landmarks. I mean, the Brooklyn Rail is pretty famous, but I don't know. I just had a lapse.
Is it, but
So
it's
yeah,
got.
he's
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
no, so Cărtărescu is very famous in Romania. Yeah.
So, and what is your review of the book? I mean, don't you have to not say, did you dig it or did you not dig it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's a little long. It's
Yeah.
very complex. It's hard to read it from the beginning to the end, and
Yeah.
it's very hard to put together a narrative. But I did it. I actually put together a narrative of the book. So
I
you should
can't
read
wait.
it. But yeah, you should read it. But you didn't read the book at all?
No, I read
Did
the
you stop?
book and I loved
Oh,
it.
you
It
read
was
the
like
book.
my favorite book of 2000. I think it came out in 2023 in English. It was my favorite book of the year. I
Oh
loved it
yeah, huh?
so much. I was
Wow.
my heart was taken by it because it just it was, and it's probably also, the translator has a lot to do with that too, where they it's how I mean
Yeah, I know if he's a friend. He's a good translator, yeah. Hard body.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and it's just, it was like I loved it. I want to I can't wait to read it again. I have too many other books to read, but I do want to read it again one day.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
That's because it's not easy to read. So that's a, but he has other books in English. He has other books in English.
I tried one of his other books and it didn't feel the same and I can't remember what book it was. But
Was it Nostalgia?
oh no, I don't think so. I don't think it was that
No.
one.
Oh,
Oh,
was it
maybe.
well, hold on. Orbitor, no, Blinding.
I can't remember. And I should give it another
Yeah.
try because maybe I was expecting Solenoid and then it just and then I was just, I have
But
oh.
Solenoid is probably his masterpiece, probably. I would,
Yeah.
yeah, I think,
It is a
yeah.
masterpiece. I was it's just
Yeah.
it's I walked away from that just it was just so cool. So cool. And it makes me want to go hang out in Romania just to like to because it's set in Bucharest, right? Is that the
Yeah.
yeah, and it's really set in Bucharest. And it's just I almost want to go just hang out in Bucharest just to like feel the solenoid energy.
I don't think you're gonna find it, but you
Yeah.
can go.
Do you get back to Romania or since you're so much
So
closer now?
yeah,
Yeah.
I go because when I lived in America, there was a period of 15 years when I didn't go at all. But
Right.
Yeah,
Or
now
I
I
wait,
go
was
and
it
read.
hard to go when the but like am I'm talking before the wall or the or was am
Well, no,
I
I didn't. No, I came to America in 91 after the wall fell.
Oh,
So
okay.
I came right after communism fell. Yeah.
Wow. What was that like going from that to
Oh,
right
it
into
was.
like yeah.
People don't remember anymore that this world was so different. When I came to America, because I had never been to any other country, actually, America, from communist Romania, I came to America. So
Wow.
it was like going to the moon. It was really like going to the moon. It was very different. Yeah. It
Yeah. And
was a
it,
completely different world.
yeah.
Completely different world.
Do you remember things that were like kind of disconcerting where it's just like, why is this happen? Why do they do it this way? It's where, or was it everything?
I was wondering how come Americans even exist. This is like, no, the one of the things that were the most bizarre was the highways. I mean, I had, highways with 10, 12 lanes. I had never seen anything like it. It was like really being on the moon. I mean, in Romania, we only had one lane.
Have you read
yeah.
Jenny Erpenbeck? She has a book out. Oh, what was her, that book called? And that was
Oh yeah,
also
I
one
read a lot
of,
of Erpenbeck actually. Yeah, I
yeah,
read
because
her first book, The Old Child. I think it's her best book, the first one, Old Child.
okay.
I read the yeah, I like that the best. And I read Visitation, but I didn't like it that much. And I read Kairos, which I liked,
Kairos,
but
that's the one I was thinking
yeah.
of. Because she talks about it, the way she sets up that love story is so amazing. And I really felt like, and you would be the expert I should ask on this. I felt like she really showed what it was like to be an Eastern European and then have the wall come down and how she was kind of going back and forth into the West and just how almost how it was confusion. Like it wasn't like this big savior thing, like, oh, thank
But
you. It was.
yeah, but actually, for I think for a part of the book, she goes between. I think she, I may misremember, but I think even during communism, she was going between the two in
Yes.
the
Yeah.
book,
Yeah.
which is kind of rare because at the time, very few people could do that. I'm not sure if she did it in real life or just in the book. But
Right.
anyhow, in the book, she does it before and
Yeah.
after communism. I like that book, but I don't know. I don't think it was quite as good as The Old Child. Or it may be also because I experienced that world. And for me, if I were an American, maybe it would be more exotic, more interesting. But for me, it was a lot less so.
That makes sense. Yeah. It's because it totally fascinates me. I remember when the wall came down and it's and I the first Eastern European country I went to was Czech Republic, and that was in 96, and it was just like, and that was another world. I mean, now they have like McDonald's and Starbucks, but at the time,
Yeah.
if you wanted a good coffee, you got the Kahve Türk. You had to get the Turkish coffee, or you were getting the third or fourth brew of a cup of coffee that was like,
I haven't been to Prague yet.
oh yeah, it's
I've
beautiful.
seen very little of Europe because I lived in America. I came to Europe 4 years ago, so I still need to discover Europe.
You actually became American. You don't go around.
Well,
You don't travel in Europe.
no, I mean, I do a little bit, but I still there are still many things to discover. So, I mean, I've been going back and forth to see my parents. My father died last year, so I did that for a while. So, yeah. So, but I'm planning to go discover, the rest of Europe now. I went to Great Britain a few times. I went a little bit through France, to the south of France. I go to Romania twice a year. I went a little bit to Germany. I went to Belgium a little bit, and Italy once. So there are many countries in Europe.
And it's so
So,
that's the thing about the United States. It's just so vast. It's so
yeah,
insane. Like I the,
it's bigger than Europe, I think. Yeah, it's bigger
yeah.
than Europe. Yeah, it is.
I've probably been to more countries in Europe than I've been to other states. Well, no, that's I've because of the close borders of like when you're near New York and all of a sudden you're in Jersey and Connecticut. So that like adds up really fast. But in California, it's just like you I didn't even leave the state. I left the state when I was 17 to go to Hawaii. That was like my first. And then after that, I went to New York, but that was for a very stupid reason. And then after that, I hadn't left the state for like till I was in my 20s.
But
I
even
went to.
California, it's so big. I mean, it's so
It's
long
ins.
from north to south. It's very long.
When people go, oh, you live in LA, you should talk to my friend. He's in California too. Oh, where at? Sebastopol.
Yeah.
dude,
Yeah,
it's like an
I
Italian going to Norway. All right, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, not quite, but it's a long way.
So what was it about learning French that, well, French, you learned French in school. What was it about going to get the PhD in French? What was it about French that just drove you? You're like, I'm all in on getting this down.
Well, so first, when I started to learn French, it was at a time when in Romania, kids could learn two languages in schools, and only after that they changed it to one language. So the first language we would started when we were 7 or 8, and that's when I started to learn French. And from the beginning, I was the best in class. I was, I had a special gift for languages, so I loved it. And then I decided to go to college to have French as my major, because in Romania you decided what your major is when you were in high school, and so when you apply to college you took an exam in the major. You had to be very good. Instead of, you didn't take an SAT, SAT, there was not, SAT was like when you were in 9th grade or 10th grade, that kind of thing. When you went to college, you took a very serious exam in the major. So I took a serious exam in French, and then I got a bachelor's in French in Romania. And then I emigrated to the States, and it's in the States that I got my PhD.
Cool. And did you just continue on that? 'Cause you're like, hey, I can get a PhD in this, like with
Because it
just
was what
breathing.
I liked it, and I was good at it, so.
And when you went from Romania to the States, was Northern California like where you landed, or did you land somewhere else?
No, actually I came as a political refugee to the States because I was married in Romania with the man who was a political dissident during communism. So I got married very young. So he was a dissident, and he was on a kill list. I mean, we were both on a kill list of Ceausescu, and it is a complicated story. So at some point we applied for a political visa, and we didn't get it, and then the regime fell. I mean, we both participated in the revolution against the regime, and then the regime fell in December 89. And after that, for many years, it was a big turmoil in Romania. It was a very unstable situation. And because the situation was still unstable, the Americans decided to give refugee status to Romanians, to certain Romanians that were political dissidents before, even though the regime had fallen. So basically, we got accepted as political refugees, even though the communist regime had fallen. So it was kind of absurd, but we got it. And so we left in 1991 as political refugees. But the way it worked, once if Amer when America when the, they approve your status as a political refugee, then they put you on a list. I mean, there are people in America that become sponsors of political refugees. So then they give to these potential sponsors, they give the names of the refugees, and then the sponsor decide, okay, we're going to take these people. So we were taken by the Lutheran Social Services from Florida, from Jacksonville, Florida. And so we arrived in Florida just by the luck of the draw, so to speak. So it was totally random. Yeah. And it was quite an experience, because I mean, it was nothing, because all we knew about America was from the movies and obviously from books. It was nothing like in the movies. It was just, it
You're
was
like,
a,
this isn't
it was bit,
Baywatch.
it was not Baywatch. That's the thing. It was Florida of the evangelists, and we didn't know anything about it. Like we were adopted by a church of evangelists, Baptist, and And we discovered that you couldn't drink on Sundays, and on the beach, the swimsuits had to have a certain length. That was an America that we didn't know. So it was so bizarre.
Wait, what? So are so between the 89 and 91, are you and your husband like kind of in hiding? Are you trying to like keep a low profile and just try to get the situation taken care of?
So we were not in hiding, but we were under constant supervision. We had a car constantly parked in front of our building because we were in a block of flats. That was 24 hour. And when we went out, they were after us. And we discovered later after the regime fell that the secret police had installed a microphone behind our bed with which they recorded everything. And then many years later, my then husband, because he's no longer my husband, he was allowed to see his file from the secret police, and the file contained 2,000 pages with all the conversations, everything. So it appears that they paid about, they had dozens of people following us constantly, and they paid about, I think, I'm not sure, I think 50, about the equivalent of $50,000 for our supervision per month. In a country in which the monthly income was $40 a month, that was the monthly income that the average that people had at the time, $40 a month. So it was just, I mean, if you, even one when I think about it, it seems like a story that somebody invented. Even for me, it doesn't seem real. It's so bizarre when you think about it. It's that this could even happen.
And when was the file opened to him? Was it after you came to the States?
You mean when he was able to see his file, or what? Because he was able to see his file when one of the new governments allowed people to see their former files.
Oh, okay. So you were still in Romania and you saw the file.
So he came with me obviously in the States, and at some point he returned to live in Romania, I think in 2007 or 2008, and then he decided that he wanted to see his file. And you need to make an application to see your former file from the secret. Many people have files from the secret police because they were many people were done that were under supervision. Even people who didn't do anything, sometimes they were under supervision. In fact, speaking of which, I found out from somebody who's writing a book about the secret police, he discovered that everybody who was who had how do you call this? Got in abonnement in English. See, I'm starting to think in French. So I, when you go to a library and you have a library card, everybody who had a library gate or the British state, because I was a student in French, okay? So in order to be a student in French, you need to read books. And in Romania, there were very few books in foreign languages. So then we enrolled, we had library cards to the library of, in my case, of France. They had this official library in every big city, or the library of other countries. So, but then I found out that every person who had a library card to a foreign country was considered by the regime a spy. So basically, everybody who studied foreign languages was a spy from the point of view of the regime, if you can believe it. I didn't even, I mean, I had no idea, but apparently that was enough. So it was just totally absurd. Everything was utterly absurd.
When you're in the situation, before you get to the United States, there has to be a level of constant anxiety. Is there kind of a level of constant anxiety, or did it feel a little normal to have that much anxiety?
No, so what do you mean when I came to the States, or
No, when you were still in Romania and you were and there's risk, there's huge risk. So
oh, you mean during communism? You mean during communism?
Was there a state of
Well,
anxiety, or was it kind of like this is the status quo and I don't know anything else?
yeah, that's a good question. People get used to any type of situation, so in the end, there's no more of a state of anxiety than in any other type of situation. You get used to it. You get used to everything. So no, it's just that people were kind of they never smiled basically, but there wasn't, I wouldn't say that there was more a generalized type of anxiety, no. Yeah. And the funny thing is that even if there was, people didn't talk about it because it was not something that was talked about. In America these days, there was constant young people that constantly complain about anxiety. They talk all the time about anxiety. I don't know if you noticed, there is like a fashion of being suffering of anxiety. So they live in a world that it's much better than most other worlds, and yet they suffer of anxiety all the time. So the fact that if you live in a really bad regime, you don't necessarily have more anxiety than people who live in a much better conditions, because as I said, people get used to everything.
When you're in the United States for a while and you start to feel like assimilated into American, I don't know if you ever felt assimilated. Did you ever feel at a moment where you're like, wait, I feel assimilated to American culture?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't use the word assimilated because I don't like to assimilate under any under any circumstances to any culture.
I
But
mean, I'm just, you know, not like you have a Bible, a handgun, and a flag on you all the time, but you know, it's
no. I did feel more and more American the more I wrote in English. That's for me, language is essential. So the more I mastered, the better I mastered English, the more I felt an American. So there was a time when I really became really good at English and started to have books in English that I started to say that I'm an American. But well, a lot of things happened, which I'm not going to go into now. I mean, just briefly, I fell very ill. I got my second divorce. I then a lot of the insane political situation in the States started around 2016 or so. So all of these things kind of coincided for me. Then I started to feel less and less American for many reasons. And then I decided, I was very ill, so like I couldn't leave because I was very ill. But once I started to feel better, I decided I need to leave. I needed to come back to Europe. So I'm back to Europe.
And you decided on Strasbourg, and what makes that decision over Bordeaux or over Normandy or over you know, like Spanish border or south of France? Like, what was it about Strasbourg that drew you?
Well, there is a very clear and reasonable reason. I was a student in Strasbourg in 95. Yeah, I was, yeah, in 95, 96, and then in 97, I was a student. I was because I had I did my master's at the University of Florida, but I was the only student in my class in French who had never been to France. Because I could not go to France from communist Romania. So I was a student. Everybody else had been to France. You know, Americans go to France when they are young. And so I finished my master's without ever having been to France. So I said, I need to go to France. So I took money on a loan and I went for a year as a student in France. And I decided on Strasbourg for, I don't know, for some reason. And, so I lived as a student in Strasbourg, and I loved it. So then, when I decided I was going to come back to Europe in 2021, I was thinking where in Europe. Initially, I thought Romania, and then it didn't work out. And I said France, and I said, "Well, I'm going to come to around Strasbourg because that's the area I know,
Isn't it
and that's the place I
fascinating?
love."
It's fascinating the decisions we make when we're young, how they affect us later in life, where
Exactly.
it's like
But without knowing, because I didn't know
yeah.
at the time that,
No, go ahead. You didn't know at
you
the
never
time.
know.
Wait, that
I didn't know
it
at the time that I would come back. I
yeah.
mean,
Yeah.
it is fascinating how life brings you back.
It is. And then it's just like the decisions pile up, and then all of a sudden it's just like, oh wow, if I didn't do blank, blank, and blank, I would be in a completely different place.
Exactly. Oh,
But
I
I,
tell myself that many, many times.
yeah. I do it in a way that's self-defeating that I'm trying to stop, where it's just, it's just like, oh man, I wish I did this, this, and this. And it's just like, I have to put a stop to those and go, we're in the present right now. Forgive yourself for the past, which is so hard for me to do. Like, forgive myself for my stupid decisions. It's not easy to do. I don't know if you have, if you look at it in a positive way or a negative way. I try to look at it in a positive way for myself, but it often turns negative, and I'm trying to work on that.
Yeah, well, it's a complicated question, but let's just put it briefly. I tell myself many times, if I hadn't done this. So basically, life is extremely, you cannot anticipate. I mean, the way I was convinced that I was going to die in the United States. I was absolutely sure that I was going to die in the United States, that my life was set forever, that nothing would change. If you had told me, okay, let's say we are in 2026. If you had told me in 2015 that 10 years later I would be living in Europe and, my life would be completely different, that I would start again to write, I would move again from English to French because I was, I had, it's so hard. English is my third language. So I worked a whole lifetime to become a writer in English and also living in the States depended on that, because once I achieved that extremely difficult thing of becoming a writer in English, I was not going to leave it, because leaving America meant also kind of losing, because it's not the same thing. It's you as a when it's your third language, if you leave the country, you kind of lose the language a little bit. So I did never imagine that I would start my life again, this late in life, and move again from this language I acquired in a lifetime, move again. Now I'm moving to French, which is my second language, but which I don't master as well as English. So I never anticipated this turning of events in my life.
Do you dream in English and French, or is one more dominant in your dreams?
Yeah, people ask me, but I can't really answer that question because my dreams are so, I don't know, I just cannot answer that question, because when I was younger, I could have dreams in which I could tell in which language I'm dreaming, but now they are much more emotional or visual, and I remember the older I get, the less I remember my dreams. So frankly, I have no idea, but I do, but I think in the language of the country in which I am, and I think in relation to the people I speak with. I mean, I'm in France, so I speak with people in French, so then I think in French. But sometimes in my mind, actually I'm thinking in English sometimes, even now, because I'm speaking to people in English, so I'm trying to explain something. So it's it varies, and if I'm in Romania, I think in Romanian, so it just basically varies.
It's funny because I since I've been learning Spanish, like I'll be trying to speak Spanish with somebody in my dreams. I'd be so frustrated because I'm not getting the words out. And I think that's just my frustrations with it takes a long time, but at the same time, if you think in the language, then it goes faster. But I'm not thinking enough in the
Oh,
language.
yeah.
But when I have my tutor, when me and him converse on our 1 hour a week, like for the most, I know he talks a lot slower for me, but like we just talk in Spanish, and I think in Spanish for like an hour, and it's just like, whoa, what just happened? And how did I get that word? I didn't even know that word existed. I don't even think I ever said it in my life, but I knew that what word to say, and it came out. It's so much fun to rewire our brains. It's all rewiring our brains.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, I love that too. To think of the world in a completely different way.
And it's I think it's a it's just such a shame, especially in the United States, that they don't really push for the kids to learn another language. It's kind of a shame because it cha I feel like it changes the person in a different way if you have two languages.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
I mean,
true.
is that something that when you were young, when you're like 7, 8 years old, that's just, again, that's probably just status quo. Oh, now I think in French, because I'm in French class, and now I think in Romanian again.
Well, I mean, when I was a child, I was thinking in Romanian all the time, but
Okay.
I just loved languages. But
Yeah.
yeah. I'm sorry, what was your question again? What's
I
your
have no clue. English is my first language. I'm sorry.
A lot of people in the world would love to have English as their first language.
English is hard, isn't it? Like hard to learn. Was it harder to learn English than it was to learn French?
No.
No? Oh, okay.
English grammar is much easier than other grammars.
Okay.
It's hard to pronounce for somebody who's French, for example. I mean,
Right.
they have a bad pronunciation,
Yeah.
I mean, in English. Or for, it depends on, if you're French, it's hard to pronounce. But English grammar, it's much easier than other grammars,
Is it
really.
similar to Romanian? Is there more
Oh, God,
similarities?
no.
No, okay.
No.
You're just like, no, stop. Don't even ask that question.
Romanian grammar is pretty complicated.
Is it?
It's pretty difficult, yeah.
I just read Crime and Punishment for the first time by Dostoevsky, and
You read it in Romanian?
I read it in
I'm
Romanian.
just
And I gotta tell you,
kidding.
I got nothing out of it. I don't get
Oh,
the
really? You
hype. No,
just
I'm just
read it?
like,
Oh, that's funny.
this doesn't mean anything. Oh, maybe I got the wrong language. Yeah, no, it's just, it's so interesting how there is a, I didn't understand why there's a character list at the beginning of Russian classic novels. And it's just like, oh, because referring to a character in different names has a different, it's almost like usted and tu, or vous and toi in French, where it's just like, you call somebody a certain name, that means your family, but you shift their name around if it's another situation. I think I might be wrong on that.
Well, to be honest, I mean, I haven't read, I read Russian literature as a teenager in Romanian, and since then I read maybe some when I was in my 20s. So basically, I haven't read Russian literature in a long time, except
Yeah.
so I don't remember. So they have in English, they have a list of characters like that.
On the
I don't
first
remember
few
that.
pages, yeah, and it's, and it'll say like the re like the different references of
Could it be because there are many characters? Because sometimes when there are
might be
many
that
characters in the
too.
book, they do this.
Yeah, maybe I'm reading into it too much. Maybe I'm glamorizing it too much in my head, and I, because I have no clue. So the yeah, but it's that was, I think that was the first Russian classic I read. I haven't read any other Russian classics either. I'm a late bloomer. I didn't really start reading until I was in my 20s. So it was that it was just something that opened up to me after I was, well, as I was leaving the Jehovah's Witnesses, because speaking of salvation, I grew up a Jehovah's Witness, so I was in
See, I
a,
remember that. I think when I met you, I think you talked about this. It was,
yeah.
I think, in a bar in San Francisco. It was at a
Okay.
reading, and I vaguely remember this, vaguely.
Yeah, and if it was 2010-ish, that was rare. That was right when my novel came out. That was based on my life growing up a Jehovah's Witness, and so I was, all my readings were essentially, if I was storytelling or doing a reading event, it was something from that, so I can, keep pushing the book. And then I was like, I can't wait to get out of this, so I don't have to talk about it ever again. It's just like, I'm done with it. And again, no, it got worse. It's like, keeps coming up. I thought I could just put that to bed. Nope. The decisions our parents make also screw us over too. It's just like, if I could have, instead of Jehovah's Witness, if my parents chose Mormon, then I could have gone to college. Because you can't do that in the Jehovah's Witnesses at that time. And there's another thing that Mormons do too, where it's just like,
And the Mormons, and the Mormons send a lot of their kids as missionaries to France. I know
yeah,
that.
and
So
they
you
only
could have
have to
gone
do
on a
2 years. In the Jehovah's Witnesses, you do your whole life. I'm like, 2 years? I only would I have to do 2 years? Give me a Mormon in a second. I'll go do 2 years. That's easy. Anyway, it's quite insane. So, and then what brought you? You ended up living in the Bay Area, yeah?
Yeah, so I lived in Santa Cruz
Okay.
for 17 years. I
And
mean,
what?
I lived, okay, hold on. I moved from Arizona to Wallala in Northern California, Wallala in Mendocino County in 2004. And
Okay.
then I lived there with my second husband until 2006. And then we bought a house in Santa Cruz. And then I lived from 2006 to 2022. So for 16 years in Santa Cruz, yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay. So
Yeah.
you've lived in more states than I have. You're like you are more American than me. I've only lived in California.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I grew
Oh,
up near the airport in San Francisco. I grew up in Millbrae, and then I lived in
wow.
San Francisco most of my life until I moved to Los Angeles. So, yeah, that's my
And you
life
don't like
history.
Los Angeles.
Don't tell people. Come on, that was between you and me.
Most people, there is this war between San Francisco and Los Angeles. Most people are from San Francisco don't like Los
Oh,
Angeles.
yeah.
It's kind of common, I
The
think. And
well,
there are
there's
totally different cultures, I think.
a
Different cultures.
completely different.
Completely.
When I had to come to Los Angeles, I said I'm approaching this as if I'm going to a European city and I'm going to learn the culture. Really, I did that my I did I'm like I'm not going to hate on LA. I'm going to go down there and go, "Huh, this strip mall's interesting. Let's walk through the and I got to tell you, the doors opened for me. There's like some really cool stuff that happens in strip malls that we would just take for granted, where it's just like there's like comedy clubs and big time celebrities are in there, and you're just going, "Oh my God, like, hi, oh wow." It's so when I came down and I was open to the Los Angeles culture, it was almost like Paris. Los Angeles opened itself up to me, and it was really cool. And my San Franciscan friends were just like, "LA, huh?" And I'm like, "Oh, okay. I'm not gonna tell you because it's cool." But I mean, since COVID, it has not gotten the LA has
Yeah.
lost. LA has completely lost itself. So has San Francisco. I go back to San Francisco, and it's just so depressing after COVID. It's just like armed guards at
A lot of people say that
Safeway.
COVID really destroyed us. COVID really destroyed the
Yeah.
culture in many places. The culture of being together, and
Yeah.
it really,
Yeah.
yeah.
So yes, that's
But
why.
in Europe, in Strasbourg and in Colmar, where I live, it's really, there are people on the street, there are many tourists. I mean, in the States, you never see this many tourists because there is a lot more space, I think.
Right.
So
Yeah.
here it's like packed. It's like they're packed. It's a lot of people.
During tourist
A lot
season,
of.
yeah, it's got to be frustrating. Because
Yeah,
I
actually, a lot of European cities are tired of tourists. They can no longer stand them. It's really a problem.
Yeah.
Too many tourists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's I want to be part of the problem, but then I'll stick around for a while. It'll be like, "Oh, this guy, oh, another one of you." And I'll be like, "Please, I'll be here another month." Ugh. And then, after a few years, they'll find putting up with me. They'll be like, "Oh,
Good.
okay. Hey, bonjour, Tony." Oh no, that's an Italian guy in South France. How was that? Anyway, her name is Alta Ifland, and her book is called Two Queens and a Chronicler. Alta, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Tony.
You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR LP 92.9 FM Los Gatos, and KMRT LP 101.9 FM Santa Cruz.